I will call to order the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee for Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. Just a note for the general public and folks who are here, we normally do not meet in this room. This is the room that the Public Safety Committee meets. So if you are here for Public Safety, who normally meets in this room, they are down in the basement meeting room for the Public Safety and Security Committee. For those of you who are here for the government operations, you are in the right spot. And members, we are going to go ahead and get started here this morning. We do have a rather full agenda. And the first item on the agenda today is the approval of the minutes. Representative Nelson, have you had a chance to review the minutes from the February 2nd meeting?
I glanced at them, and they look to be in order. So I move that we accept the minutes from the last meeting, February 2nd.
Any discussion on the minutes from the February 2nd, 2017 Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Representative Sundin has the first bill before the committee today, House File 697. Representative Sundin, I will move that bill before the House, and it is going to go from here to the General Register. Representative Sundin, there is an A1 amendment. Is that an author's amendment that you would like? Right, I move House File 697 to be re-referred to the committee or to the General Register. And Representative Sundin, to your bill and to your amendment. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 697, I include some compensation, or competition and job security for 12 Native tribes in Minnesota, people that choose to serve on tribal councils. This provides job security for them. I've got Reed LeBeau, who represents many of those tribes, here to clarify any questions, clarify on the bill or answer any questions.
Mr. LeBeau, welcome to the committee. If you have comments, please go ahead and state your name, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Reed LeBeau, and I'm with the Jacobson Law Group, and I represent the Fond du Lac Band in this particular bill before you. All the bill seeks to do is change...
We're to the amendment right now.
Oh, I'm sorry, just the amendment. Mr. Chairman, the amendment is just technical clarifying language to put the order in the form that it needs to be.
Members, all those in favor of getting the bill in the order that the author wants, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, to the bill. Mr. LeBeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill just makes clear that in the situation where an individual who is otherwise a public employee is elected to tribal council, that they are entitled to the same reinstatement and leave of absence policy that all other employees in the state are entitled to. That's all it does.
Right. Seeing no other testifiers, I'll ask if there's anybody from the public that would like to testify in House File 697 as amended. Anybody wishing to come forward to testify in House File 697 as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, members of the committee, questions for the bill author? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Sundin, we'll give you the last word, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just grateful for the outpouring of public support for this bill behind me here today. So many people showed up to hear this bill. Really appreciate that.
Representative Sundin, they may not exactly be here for your bill. We have a few other ones that they might be here for, so we'll check it out, though. All right. No, hearing no discussion, all those in favor of re-referring House File 697 as amended to the General Register signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion carries. Representative Sundin, you are on your way, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next bill that we have in front of us is House File 400, and the author, Representative Kresha, is here. I ask him to make his way to the testifying table. And there have been a number of individuals who have asked to testify on this. And given the committee's agenda and the amount of people who are interested in testifying today, what we are going to do is allow for 30 minutes of those who are in favor of the House file to testify and 30 minutes of those who are opposed. What we're going to ask people to do, and I have a list, and if you would like to get on the list to testify either for or against, we're going to work with you to be able to get your names up here on the list and take as many people as we can within the 30 minutes allotted for those who are for and those who are opposed to the bill this morning. What I ask people to do is to be respectful of the time of those who want to testify and the committee. When you come forward, if you have comments that you want to share, please share them. However, if someone previous to you has shared those comments, simply say, I agree with some of the comments that have been shared, and add additional or new testimony. What we're going to do is start out with about a minute and a half for each individual, because we do have a number of people who want to testify for and against the bill this morning. And we will go till all testifiers have testified or the 30-minute mark, whichever comes first. And then we will switch to the other side, go for the 30-minute mark or till all testifiers have been heard, whichever comes first. So again, being respectful to your side and your position, you'll have 90 seconds per individual. I will announce who's coming up, and I will announce the next person who's going to testify, so we aren't wasting time trying to figure out. We get people on deck and queued up and ready to go to provide that testimony. I will also ask Steve, our committee CLA, to provide testifiers with a 1 minute, 30 second, and then stop so that people know where they are at. Again, as the chair, if I hear people who are sharing additional testimony that's already been testified, I will interrupt and say, do you have additional things? It is absolutely perfectly fine for folks to come up if they want to say, I agree with testimony that is given and I am in favor of, or I am opposed to. That's important for the committee to know as well. So again, trying to hear from as many people as we can on the matter before the committee. So Representative Kreisha, House File 400, I know that you have a DE amendment that you are looking at on here as well to get the bill in the shape that you are looking at. Representative Kreisha, I move House File 400 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. And Representative Kreisha, to your bill and to the amendment. Welcome, Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the GovOps Committee. Would you like to take the DE up right away and then go ahead and pass that, and then we can go to the bill?
Questions for the DE amendment? All right, Representative Kreisha, first of all, I will move the DE amendment before the committee. Representative Halverson, to the DE-1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since it is a DE, I think I didn't hear any brief description, but that would be helpful. Thank you.
Representative Kreisha, do you want to just grab the DE, please?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'd like to turn to nonpartisan House research, Mr. Gehring, and he can do a much better job of at least making sure the technicalities are correct.
Mr. Gehring, to the DE-1 amendment before the committee.
Madam Chair, Representative Halverson and Representative Kreisha, the DE amendment sort of reformats the underlying House File 400. So the underlying bill as introduced requires vendors that engage in contracting with a state agency or legislative branch to certify that as part of their contract they don't engage in a boycott of Israel as part of their business practices. And there's a definition of boycott of Israel, which includes compliance with calls for boycott of Israel other than certain boycotts that are provided in federal law, and then also actions that are taken in a manner that in any way discriminates on the basis of nationality or national origin. So that's the underlying House File 400. The difference between House File 400 and the DE-1 is that the DE-1 sort of reformats the language to be an anti-discrimination statute as opposed to an anti-boycott statute. So it prohibits a state agency, including MNSCU, as well as legislative branch entities, from entering a contract if a vendor engages in discrimination against Israel. And then there's some language in there that requires certification as part of the terms of the contract that the vendor doesn't engage in those activities.
Representative Halverson. Other discussion on the DE-1 amendment. Representative Nelson.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Kreisha, what's the difference between a boycott and discrimination? Couldn't I say I'm not going to do business with Israel but not discriminate against them, or are they the same thing?
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Nelson. Essentially the same thing. The boycott is usually done in economic terms, but what we did here with the DE is we're actually just trying to work with all the groups. I mean, at the very core of what this bill is, members, is we're saying that this has been done federally, this is done in a number of states, and the basic concept is we're not going to discriminate against Jewish people and their businesses. We would like to do business with them in the state of Minnesota. We would like to do businesses, and there's a movement out there to boycott, divest, and put sanctions against Jewish businesses. As a practice for the state of Minnesota, I'm saying in this bill, I don't think that's acceptable. I think that as we do businesses across with Israel, we should look at the Jewish people as an economic partner and just simply say we're going to do business with you and set aside all of the other issues. So I guess to your point, the boycott word was considered a little bit strong, and so we backed down to the discrimination and just tried to make it a little bit more clear as to what the intent of the legislation will be.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that's understandable, I think. But the other question I have here is with the amendment being put on, all the things you said are about why you want to do this are probably good ideals to have, but with the exception we put on here, I could drive a truck through this bill, and you know, basically it makes it not worth the paper that's written on, because the commissioner may waive this application of the section if he determines that it's not practicable for the state to do it. And I could come up with probably 100, and depending on which way I'll do this, of 100 reasons why it's not practicable for the state. And so we're passing a bill here that basically is just more of a feel-good type of bill than actually having an effect on what's going to happen with it. So I guess I'll listen for other questions and go from there.
Other discussion on the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape and form of the author wishes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Kreischer, the bill is now in the format that you would like. Do you have some opening comments before we begin with public testimony?
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. So I'm not going to get into the actual technicalities of it. You're going to hear lots of testimony. There's lots of viewpoints and perspectives around this. I'm certainly not here to litigate any of the territorial disputes. What I'm here is simply on a personal reason. I was asked to carry this bill, and it actually goes back and touches my family's lives a little bit. 5 years ago, my family and I were lucky enough to take a pilgrimage to Israel, and we really got to know Israel at that point, the Jewish people, and as you can imagine, it was something that basically just touched our family. From there, I was able to springboard into learning more about Israel itself and the history. And when this bill came up, the first thing that happened was, this is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do for the way we were treated, the welcoming feeling that we had in hospitality, and frankly, in the Palestinian area as well as in Israel. So for me, this just came to me and said, you know what, we don't need to discriminate. We don't need to set aside anybody economically. And I think with many of the things in our history about how the Jewish people have been treated, to your point, Representative Nelson, this is a feel-good bill. And once in a while, it's okay to vote and feel good about what you do and let your head hit the pillow tonight and say, I did something right. And so I have that in front of you, and I know we have a series of testifiers who I'm sure are going to get much more technical, but that's why I'm carrying this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Kreischer. And what we will do is, again, 30 minutes for one side, 30 minutes for the other. And as I look at the clock on the wall here, it is about 10:30. So between 10:30 and 11 o'clock, we will take the first group. Between 10 or 11 o'clock and 11:30, we'll take the other side. What I will do is I will start with those who are opposed to the bill first, followed by those who are in favor of the bill. The first testifier I have on my list is Mr. Bill McGrath. If he would come forward, and when you come forward, I'll recognize you, ask you to state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony. Then following Mr. McGrath will be Mr. Matt Shearer. Mr. Matt Shearer will be next. Is Mr. Shearer here? Very good, sir. All right. Mr. McGrath, welcome. State your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Chair, I'm Bill McGrath. Your committee this morning is being asked to take action against specific Minnesotans because of the stance those Minnesotans are taking towards a foreign nation. I am opposed to House File 400. Similar coercion was tried 100 years ago in Minnesota with bad results. In 1917, most Minnesotans were prepared to fight against Germany. Our state government set up a commission to isolate any citizens who did not share that pro-war attitude against the foreign nation of Germany. Meanwhile, in New Ulm, civic leaders presented a petition to the government. Their statement said that the German-American men of New Ulm were willing to serve in the U.S. military but they did not want to be sent into combat against their German cousins. The state of Minnesota retaliated by removing the New Ulm mayor from his position as mayor and the New Ulm city attorney from his position as city attorney. During the remainder of 1917, other German Americans in Minnesota were jailed, beaten up, or deprived of their livelihoods. None of this repression saved any American lives on the battlefields of Europe. House File 400 seems to be another attempt to get the state of Minnesota to take action against specific Minnesotan citizens because of their attitude towards a foreign nation, Israel. Thank you for listening.
Mr. McGrath, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Scheer, and then followed by Fanna Towns. Fanna Towns? Very good. Just want to make sure we're ready to go. Mr. Scheer, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself, who you're with, for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Matt Scheer. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Admin. First, wanted to thank Representative Kreischer for doing the delete all amendment. Adding the exception to the bill significantly helps us with single-source contracting. But would also like to make a couple comments today that are not with respect to the subject matter. Admin does not have a position on the Arab-Israeli conflict, and we won't unless required by statute. Admin administers state contracting law 16C, as you might be aware. And one of the concerns that we have is that over the years, different interests and ideas have been added into state contracting. There's about a 43-page long solicitation document that businesses have to navigate in order to bid on a state contract. And this represents a significant hurdle for small businesses. So any additions to that make it a little bit more challenging for those businesses. In addition, wanted to point out two other comments. First, is that any prohibition on bidding on state contracts necessarily reduces competition, which can potentially increase prices for the state of Minnesota. If you prohibit a business from bidding, if they don't meet a certain criterion, there won't be as many responses to state contracts. Well, this particular proposal may not impact a significant number of businesses. Any of them would make a difference. And finally, Each time conditions are placed in state statute, I did want to make a point that it increases the risk of bid protest. When a losing bidder believes that a winning bidder might be in violation of state statute, they can require or they can submit a protest to admin. And when that happens, it actually places the administrative burden on admin to assess the veracity of the winner's claims. So from that perspective, it could potentially have some challenges for us down the road in determining whether or not a business is in violation of state statute. So,
Mr. Chair, thank you for your testimony. Ms. Towns, and then followed by Mr. Greg Hagan. Mr. Scheer, apparently Representative Halverson has a quick question for you. Again, Representative Halverson, we are looking to try to keep this within the 30 minutes for the time of the people opposed and for.
I understand. I just wanted some explanation.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Scheer. Mr. Scheer, could you, so in your analysis of some of the problems that this might create for the state, is could there be a financial liability for the state as you settle any disputes that you have with potential businesses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, I can't really identify or quantify that because unless the situation came about, I wouldn't be able to identify or anticipate how many of these instances might happen. But, if a bid protest does take place, there is an administrative burden on admin, which would necessarily probably have a cost. It would be hard to estimate that, being that you wouldn't be able to really anticipate things happening in the future. I hope that helps.
Representative Halverson.
Mr. Chair, it does help. Could lawsuits against the state spring up from this?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, I'd actually have to check with our staff about what a bid protest looks like a little bit more. My understanding is that they protest to us administratively, and then we need to determine the veracity of that. So I guess potentially if someone disagreed, that might be possible, but I am not sure at this time.
Representative Kreischer.
I'm just wondering if I could respond quickly.
Sure.
And I just thought I would add, as I looked at this and obviously, we would be adding the Jewish people to this as well. And my question is, we already have lots of places where we can't discriminate. Let's just make sure that we're clear on this is one more that we're not going to discriminate against. And, yes, absolutely, other lawsuits and so forth. If we're going to be afraid of lawsuits because of discrimination practices, I think we're going to have to look at the whole thing as a whole and not just parse this one out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson, again, you're cutting into the time of the people who are opposed. I just want you to be aware of that.
I just want to be clear that my concern is not discrimination lawsuits. I think that those are it's very important to make sure that people have all of their rights intact. My concern is about the state's concern regarding the challenge of the language and potential bid protests that might not come because of discrimination actions. I think that there's some language issues. So,
thank you, Mr. Shearer. Ms. Towns, if you will identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm
Sam. Oh, one second. Ms. Sylvia Schwartz is next. Ms. Schwartz, very good.
I'm Santa Towns, and I'm from St. Paul. I want to bring to the attention of our legislators that you are on the verge of enacting a bill that violates our First Amendment rights of free speech. The use of economic pressure in the form of consumer and commercial boycotts has a long history in this country. Boycott is a historically recognized grassroots form of nonviolent protest. I am an individual who has spent many years engaged in boycott coming from New Orleans. And so we are aware of the Montgomery bus boycott, the Nashville lunch counter boycotts, the Cesar Chavez boycott. All of these were recognized forms of free speech in America. Economic boycotts also helped bring about the collapse of South African apartheid. There's nothing technical about any of this. And so I asked you to consider the real ramifications of this bill, that of limiting, violating the First Amendment right of freedom of speech. Thank you.
Ms. Towns, thank you. Mr. Hagan, then Ms. Schwartz. I got just a tad out of order when I was making the announcement. Mr. Hagan, Mr. Craig Hagan, then Ms. Schwartz. Mr. Hagan, welcome to the committee, sir. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Greg Hagan, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Just to be clear also, the BDS movement is not in no way an action against the Jewish people. It is a protest against the policies of the Israeli government. As a military veteran, I took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And when I left the military, I was not asked to retract that oath. So when I see an attempt by elected officials to subvert the rights we as citizens of the United States are guaranteed by the Constitution, I become very concerned. I'm at a loss to understand why any Minnesota legislator would choose to carry water for a foreign government while attempting to limit the rights of American citizens. Our legislators should be in the business of protecting our rights, not punishing us for exercising them. Whatever your views on Israel and Palestine, these types of bills should be of grave concern because they threaten the rights of everyone in the United States to take collective action to address injustice. Moreover, we should all be alarmed that a foreign government, in this case Israel, is lobbying U.S. politicians to restrict our rights. Politicians are free to denounce BDS if they choose, but they must do so without infringing on the rights of their constituents. Thank you.
Mr. Hagan, thank you so much for your comments. Ms. Schwartz, and then followed by Adria Fernandez, if I pronounced that correctly. Thank you. And Ms. Schwartz, I'm sorry, Representative Krisha.
For the record, I have not been lobbied by Israel at all.
Duly noted. Ms. Schwartz, welcome to the committee, and thank you for being here with us today. State your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Sylvia Schwartz, and I am a Jewish American woman and an engineer. and I oppose this bill. I agree with the people before me who talked about the unconstitutionality of the bill and that it restricts free speech. I just want to repeat the words of Antonin Scalia, who said, quote, "The first axiom of the First Amendment is this: as a general rule, the state has no power to ban speech on the basis of its content." I believe the authors of this bill feel that by banning the support of boycotts against Israel, and boycott has been determined to be a form of free speech, that they will be protecting Israel. Again, Antonin Scalia, a fierce proponent of the First Amendment, said, quote, "We should celebrate rather than condemn the addition of this speech to the public debate," unquote. Free speech should never be feared. Given his opinions on all other free speech issues, we can be sure that he would have condemned this bill. Banning speech with which the state legislators disagree cannot protect another country. This bill will only serve to punish businesses and churches who have taken a principled stance on Palestinian rights. Those businesses and nonprofits must then either lie about their positions or forego receipt of government benefits. Forcing a business owner or a faith-based nonprofit into this untenable situation will have serious implications to business climate and the free speech of all citizens of Minnesota. No one in this chamber or in the state legislature should be in favor of this unconstitutional bill.
Ms. Schwartz, thank you for your testimony this morning. Ms. Fernandez, followed by Mr. Barry Cohen. Mr. Barry Cohen. Very good, sir. Ms. Fernandez, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Adria Fernandez. I would like to speak against this bill as a Jewish Minnesotan. I have worked with Jewish Voice for Peace, but my statements should be considered my own opinions. I believe House File 400 is a fundamentally misguided and anti-democratic bill. When California considered a similar law, so many legal red flags were raised that they were not able to pass the bill until the language had been watered down so much that it doesn't prohibit state contractors from boycotting Israel at all, making it a politically chilling but ultimately pointless reiteration of that state's existing anti-discrimination law. I also believe this bill represents several very disturbing political trends. The first is the broad demonization of Muslims. Israel's actions in the occupied territories are widely condemned, but this bill effectively declares advocacy for Palestinian rights to be politically out of bounds in Minnesota. Second, I think this bill should be seen in the context of a broader push to silence and criminalize activists, particularly activists of color. Along with HF 322 that would allow government to sue citizens for participating in protests, this represents an attempt to portray dissent as dangerous, to push people out of the range of respectability and humane consideration if they stand up for themselves. Third, I think this reflects a larger attempt to paint criticism of the actions of the State of Israel as anti-Semitic. In fact, the Jewish community has a long, proud tradition of dispute and dissent, and Jews of good conscience disagree on Israel and its policies. This bill should not be thought of as protecting Israel and the Jewish people, but as an attempt to privilege the opinions of one segment of Jewish and Israeli society over all others. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fernandez, for your comments. Mr. Cohen, and then Ms. Danielle Cotton. Ms. Cotton. Very good. Mr. Cohen, welcome to the committee this morning, sir. You'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Dr. Barry Cohen. I'm a retired sociologist. I'm a Jewish citizen of St. Paul, a member of Congregation Oremet for 25 years. I don't discriminate against Jewish people. I'd like to call to your attention that not only are we dealing here with a free speech issue, but think of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. So barring vendors who boycott Israel may be also unconstitutional under the clause. You would be creating a class that by law will be different than others as a result of their as a result of this law, they might suffer financial loss. Imagine, I could boycott Finland, I could boycott Fiji, I could boycott any other country in the world, but I can't boycott Israel. You are creating a class that's separate again, that could be harmed by what you propose, and this could lead to lawsuits against the state. for that kind of discrimination. The other thing I'd like to bring up, and Sylvia mentioned churches and faith organizations, many of them contract with the state to provide human services. Let me read you the list of faith organizations that have already agreed, have already passed resolutions to boycott or divest in Israel. The Presbyterian Church, Unitarian Universalist Association, United Church of Christ, United Methodist Church, the Quakers, Mennonite Central Committee, Catholic Conference of Major Superiors of Men, Alliance of Baptists, Muslim American Society, and the Islamic Circle of North America. Many of the faith organizations that I've listed here already are providing social services as vendors in many of your communities. You may be prohibiting them from doing business with Minnesota.
Dr. Cohen, thank you so much this morning for being with us. Ms. Cotton, and then followed by Mr. Bill Pentelvich. Ms. Cotton, welcome to the committee this morning. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Danielle Cotton, and I just want to say that I agree with what has been said. I believe this is a violation of the First Constitutional Amendment for the freedom of speech. I believe that boycotting has been an action and an exercise that we've been given that has made a huge change in a lot of different discriminatory actions among the history of different minorities and et cetera. And I also want to say that I oppose this bill.
Ms. Cotton, thank you for your time in front of the committee this morning. Mr. Pentelvich, and then followed by Art Sertoff, if I pronounced that correct, sir. Thank you. Mr. Pentelvich, welcome to the committee this morning, sir. You go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bill Pentelvich. I am the chair of the board of the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota. Represent 38,000 supporters in the state of Minnesota. The mission of the American Civil Liberties Union is to protect our Constitution. The ACLU takes no position on the BDS movement or on the conflict in Israel. HF 400 violates the U.S. Constitution, and there is no way around it. It violates it in two respects. First, under Article 1, Section 3, Clause 8, only Congress has the right to regulate foreign commerce. This bill unabashedly regulates foreign commerce and therefore exceeds the powers of a state legislature because the jurisdiction of Congress to regulate foreign commerce is exclusive and plenary. That's not the civil liberties issue, though. That's just a basic issue of your ability to do this. The constitutional issue is that there is a doctrine called the Unconstitutional Conditions Doctrine, which holds that a government agency, a government body, cannot impose unconstitutional conditions as a condition of contracting with state government. This bill, as currently structured, prohibits boycotts to achieve political ends. Boycotts to achieve political ends are protected expression under the First Amendment. It's well established. It's indisputable. This bill violates the free expression guaranteed by the First Amendment. I know that you have been provided, and there's back the room, an analysis by a professor at Northwestern University Law School that purports to justify this constitutionally. I suggest you read it carefully. It is a flawed and unsupportable analysis. The Constitution says what it says. The case law says what it says. This bill will not withstand judicial scrutiny. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, sir. Mr. Sertoff, followed by Zayed Amar. Zayed Amar? Very good. Good morning, Mr. Sertoff. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Art Sertoff. I'm here, a Jewish voice for peace that is in contact with 2,000 Minnesotans. The comments about free speech, I couldn't agree with more, and I'm not going to say anything else about those. As a Jew, I'm very concerned that this bill advances a dangerous and misleading definition of anti-Semitism, or in the words of a law, discrimination against Jewish people. To me, and many in the Jewish community, anti-Semitism is a powerful label that evokes mobs out of control, ransacked homes, severe beatings, killings, and a people condemned to death because of their religious belief. This bill equates criticism of the Israeli state with anti-Semitism. Nothing can be further from the truth. A significant portion of the Jewish community loves Israel, but strongly opposes its behavior regarding Palestinians, and especially within the occupied territories. We believe that Israeli behavior violates international law and demonstrates crimes against humanity. This behavior is, for me, represented in the phrase Israeli leaders use to describe their periodic military suppression of Palestinian resistance. They use the term mowing the grass. What is suppression of Palestinian, what is most abhorrent is that the Prime Minister justifies this behavior in my name. For me and many other Jews, Israeli behavior represents the opposite of Jewish values. We see boycott, divestment, and sanction international movement as a peaceful and nonviolent way to pressure the Israel that we love into behaving in accordance with Jewish values. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sirkoff, thank you so much for your testimony this morning. Mr. Amra, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, followed by Mr. Harry Mueller. Mr. Harry Mueller, excellent. Thank you, sir. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Ziad Amra. A little background. I was born and raised here in Minnesota to immigrants from Palestine. And my mother was a homemaker, and my father was the chief of surgery at St. Francis Hospital in Shakopee. And before that, he volunteered and was a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy during Vietnam as a medical officer. And so, you know, we have a long history of involvement in civic service to this country and this state. And as a Palestinian-American, I want to tell you how disturbed I am by this legislation, because I fail to see how it adds any value to the economy and to the taxpayers and the citizens of the state. Rather, what it does is it protects Israel, a sovereign foreign nation, from any criticism for its you know, criminality, especially in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem. These are occupied territories. Our own government, has supported distinguishing between the Israel itself and the occupied territories of which it illegally occupies. This year, 2017, will be the 50th year of this illegal occupation. UN Security Council resolutions in 1980 and most recently this year, again, call on nations of the world, including the United States, to make a distinction between Israel and the occupied territories. Now, this legislation that you are proposing would do away with that and would encourage businesses and the state of supporting, war crimes and illegal occupation. We own land there. I have land there. I've inherited land there. I mean, I'm being forbidden from advocating for that it be returned to me, that it can be expropriated without compensation. Yesterday, Israel passed a law that they can expropriate all private Palestinian land without compensation. And you're saying that I can't say anything about this if I want to do business with the state or provide services to the poor. That's outrageous. It doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve us. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Mr. Mueller, and then I have Keldon Abakal. Very good, sir. Is it Mueller or Miller?
Mueller.
Thank you, sir. If you will speak your name for the record.
I am Harry Mueller. I'm a retired Lutheran clergyman, and I'm here representing myself, but also countless numbers of grandparents and parents of Palestinian kids. In 84, I traveled to South Africa, and I was a part of a discussion and debate in our church body on this same issue as to whether we should disinvest money and put pressure on the apartheid system in South Africa. And 10 years later, with the pressure that was put on, there was a turnover. There had been an expected bloodbath, and there was no bloodbath after that turnover. I want you to hear me. I'm not anti-Jewish. My scripture are the same as Jewish people, but there's a cycle to violence. First there's an injustice, and then there's protest, and then there's a repression of it, and we see that in our own state as well. But when there's a repression and it becomes sanctioned by church body, religious bodies or business bodies or government bodies, it only feeds to the cycle of violence. And the parents and the grandparents of Palestinian kids don't want to see their kids coming with knives because they're so frustrated not being able to get a good education or jobs or anything like that. I used to ask the people in my parishes if they wanted their politics to govern their religion or if they wanted the best of their religion to govern their political decisions. And I would say to you that if you don't let mercy, humility, justice, inclusivity, and nonviolence guide your decision on this bill, this misguided bill, then you will feed the cycle of violence. Thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Mr. Mueller, thank you for your testimony today. And following Mr. Abaco will be Jordan Kushner. Jordan Kushner.
Hello, my name is Khaldun Abu Haikal. I'm a Palestinian American, a small businessman in Minnesota. I came to this country 25 years ago, and actually I was appointed on the board of Food Safety and the Defense Task Force by the governor, so I'm very well. Don't worry, guys. My point here, I currently own two businesses that employ over 75 employees, and the majority of my business is with the state of Minnesota. And as a Palestinian who moved from that land just for the same issue that we are under occupation, no freedom of speech, no freedom of expression, the only deal for you is either violence and get into that circle of violence or try to make it through education and move. And that's what my parents sent me here so I could avoid that. Coming here, and this thing is coming to hunt us down here, that, no expression of speech, of speech. I don't think it's fair for us, for me in particular, as a Palestinian American who's been under occupation and my parents and my family still under that occupation, that I have to sign a waiver that I cannot boycott Israel, although most likely my business will never have to do business with Israel, but it's just the principle of the First Amendment of freedom of speech. I don't think in principle that I could sign that waiver and do it. Many people might lose their jobs because I'm not going to do it, or I'm going to have to get involved in the legal action against the state because this is unfair and unjust. And I'm going to end with this deal. In the Middle East, there's a joke that they say. The only place that you can open your mouth is the dentist. Don't make this country that way, please. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Jordan Kushner, followed by Craig Harris. Jordan Kushner. Mr. Harris, if you'd like to proceed, it does not look like we have Mr. Kushner or Ms. Kushner here today. I'm not sure if it's Jordan male or Jordan female.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Craig Harris, and I'm adding my voice to the strong opposition against this legislation. I agree with the things that everybody that spoke before has said, so I'm not going to repeat any of that. I'm just going to...
Including me? Kidding.
Yes, sir. Actually, what I wanted to say was I'm happy that you and others are able to go to Israel and have a really good experience and that feels good. My daughter lives in the Haitian refugee camp in Bethlehem, and she and her family lives under the occupation. I just got back after a month living there, and I can tell you they don't feel good. I think that a feel-good legislation is inappropriate. I think that there's no way that this body should be entertaining something like this as a feel-good legislation. I think that it should be exposed as what it is, which is a well-funded national campaign to demonize people with an opposing point of view as being anti-Semitic and to silence dissent. I reject this wholeheartedly, and I encourage you all as legislators to have the courage to stand up for free speech. If indeed there is other anti-discrimination legislation already on the books, why do we need this? Why is this so important that this body do this legislation at this time? And I just reject that it's necessary, and I just think it's inappropriate. And please don't do this.
Mr. Harris, thank you for your testimony today. That concludes the people that I had on the list for opposed. Given the fact that Representative Halverson had asked a few questions, I want to continue to be fair for the full 30 minutes. Is there someone who, one or two people who may want to spend a few moments addressing the committee that was not on the list that is opposed before we move? Sir, if you come down, we'll give you a chance to testify. And ma'am, you'll be the other one that I'll be able to have time for here today. Again, opposed before we move to those who are in support. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Asa Diebolt. I am a Jewish resident of Minnesota, and I oppose this bill. As some people have stated, this bill is legally indefensible. It will not stand up to review. It is largely symbolic, and in that you should take seriously that symbolism will be used as a tool against people who are seeking justice around the world. There are students at the University of Minnesota who have advocated for their political views, for their for divesting from companies which profit from the occupation, and they have been victims of slander and harassment, as being accused of being anti-Semitic for simply opposing the illegal actions of another state. And this bill, if it is passed, will be used as a weapon against them to further harass students who are simply standing up for their political views. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Ma'am, if you want to come down, we'll hear your testimony, and we'll then switch to those who are in support of the bill. And Mr. Andrew Whitman will be our first testifier when we switch from those who are opposed to those who are for. Mr. Whitman? Okay, very good. You're on deck in just a moment. Ma'am, welcome to the committee. You'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Darin, and I'm from Palestine. I'm studying at Humphrey School of Public Affairs. I'm opposing this bill, and I'm agreeing with everyone that was said. I lived in Palestine. I lived in exile. I was a refugee. And after return, I witnessed two uprisings, and I had the fear to go back in June and experience the same thing, harassing at the checkpoint and live under the same circumstances. Allow the people to support and do what you have taught us at American University, freedom of speech, plus justice and equality. That's what I'm learning here, and I hope that will be applied. It's not only words on paper. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the time frame and the number of testifiers that we have for those who are opposed. We'll now move to those who are in favor. Before we do, Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to, before we move,
Whitman, you can go ahead and get ready if you'd like.
Before we move to those that support the bill, one thing I'd like to say is I'm just a legislator. I'm just a policymaker. You're going to hear, as you've heard from those that are opposed to the bill, with some deeply held convictions and passion. And what we do here is we debate ideas and we debate bills. I just because I'm carrying a piece of legislation certainly does not mean I'm an expert, nor do I have anything as far as the experience of the testifiers up here. So I just wanted to say I hope that as you take those that are in opposition and also listen to carefully those that are in support, and let us do what we do best, and that is weigh competing ideas and figure out the best policy for the state. My idea on this, and the administration came out and said this, I'm not trying to force the issue. I'm not trying to litigate this in any manner. I'm just trying to keep us out of the Arab and Israel conflict and say that the state of Minnesota should not engage in this and let the free speech happen. We're not boycotting free speech. We're allowing people to express their viewpoints, but we don't allow for discrimination in other contracts, and that's what this policy would do.
Mr. Whitman. Our first testifier on those who are in support of House File 400 as amended this morning. Mr. Whitman, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you for permitting me to testify. I'm Andrew Whitman, and I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota, but I'm not representing the University of Minnesota in any way. I'm a retired firefighter for the city of Maple Grove, paid on call. I'm not representing the city or the fire department. I'm an attorney, and I've worked in government, and I have some comments about this bill, which start out with, I should also tell you that I've been to Israel three times. I've been to Israel with a group of professors who went to Israel to determine and try to find out why they are so innovative, and I can tell you some things about that, and that was in 2015. I would recommend to the drafters of this bill that they read the book, The Startup Nation, and that will give them some economic background for this particular bill. So I certainly agree that it is the right thing to do, but moreover, it's the economic thing to do for the state of Minnesota. It has nothing to do with the rights of private citizens. It only says to the colleges and universities and entities of the state of Minnesota that they should not discriminate. There are a number of areas where they're not permitted to discriminate already, and that will be added to it. And further, I think that in looking at this bill, I think it could be simplified so that the Department of Administration doesn't have so much concern. And one way of doing that would be on the first paragraph to simply say that a contract for goods or services must not engage in a boycott of Israel, and take the certification out of it so the Department of Administration doesn't have to be involved in certification. So I'm very much in favor of this bill for those reasons. Thank you.
Mr. Whitman, thank you for your testimony this morning. Our next testifier is Steve Hinges. I'm pronouncing that right. I'm sorry, sir, if I'm missing your name there. We will proceed with your testimony, and then we are going to be followed by Sammy Rahman. Welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good morning, members of the committee, Chairman, Representative Driscoll, Representative Kreisha. My name is Steve Hunnigs, and I'm the Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas, and I thank you, and I thank everyone who's participated in this discussion for the way it's been conducted with civility and rationality, and that's certainly a hallmark of our legislative process as well as our country. And thank you, Representative Kreisha, for your comments and your support. It's deeply appreciated. I want to start here with an issue that people may not see as necessarily germane, but perhaps a unifying moment during this discussion. I was proud last year to sign this full-page ad in the Star Tribune with many other people from the state saying that discrimination against Muslims has no place in Minnesota. And I was very proud to participate in that ad with many of the leaders of our state. I'm also very proud to report that in the aftermath of the terrorist threat phoned to the Sabas Minneapolis Jewish Community Center, this community reached out to the Sabas Jewish Community Center as well as the entire Jewish community. 227 faith leaders signed a letter to the community and to the Jewish Community Center expressing solidarity, expressing support. They were Christian, they were Buddhist, they were Muslim. They were from all walks of life, and I'm very proud of that. And this is one place where Minnesotans are very united against discrimination and against threats made against our institutions. People have been speaking in certain names. I want to speak with the American people. Gallup has been polling on these numbers for many years. Exactly 1 year ago, polled on Israel-Palestinian issues and found that 62% of Americans are sympathetic with Israel, 71% Americans have a favorable view of Israel. 16 states have passed some variety of anti-BDS legislation, including Iowa. It's presently under consideration in Wisconsin, South Dakota, and North Dakota. We have significant trade between the United States and Israel, $87 million, in fact. 3M, Medtronic, other Minnesota businesses have significant business loci in Israel. This legislature itself, our legislature, has this supported Israel dating back to May 1919 when the Minnesota House of Representatives made Minnesota the ninth state to pass a resolution favoring the establishment of what was then called the Jewish Commonwealth in Palestine. So almost 100 years at that point. But let's talk about unification and what it is that we're trying to accomplish. I'm here today in front of this committee to reaffirm commitment to a two-state solution. One part of that is repudiating the delegitimization of Israel and not subsidizing bigotry or discrimination. The other side of that is strengthening the Palestinian economy, and I'm proud to say that our organization, the JCRC, has tried very hard to strengthen the Palestinian economy. We've hosted the Palestinian American Chamber of Commerce. We've posted Basar al-Mashria, visionary of the planned Palestinian city of Rawabi, when we had banks and people from many walks of life, business, diplomacy, Secretary of State, the Minister of Trade Office, Financial Services, all having an opportunity to hear from Basar al-Mashri, as well as what he represents for Palestinians. So I see these as two sides of the same coin. We're going to fight delegitimization, and we're going to do our best to strengthen the Palestinian economy in order to bring about a two-state solution to the conflict between Palestine and Israel. Just a word on the First Amendment concerns. This bill, this proposed legislation, does nothing to inhibit or impair anybody's ability to speak freely, or businesses. Businesses can speak out all they want against Israel. They can hang a banner from their entryway that says, down with Israel, whatever it is they want to say. To paraphrase President Obama with respect to another piece of legislation, all it does is say we're not going to subsidize discrimination against Israelis or Jews. There are others who will speak on behalf of this legislation. I follow in the steps of Representative Kreshaw when he says, yes, this is the very best purpose of our deliberative bodies, to take these difficult issues and analyze them and come up with the best possible public policy for the state of Minnesota. And I urge you to support House File 400, and I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. We have two other people who are on the list that have asked to speak in favor of. If there's anyone else who would like to speak in favor of the bill this morning, please identify yourself so we can get you on the list. And in keeping with the 30 minutes on both sides, I'm going to ask Mr. Raham to go ahead and testify. And then the last person I have is Valid Issa. Very good. And again, if there's anyone else who is pro that would like to, we've got some time left from the pro side for individuals to testify as well. Sir, can state your name for the record and proceed. We'd appreciate that.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair O'Driscoll and members of the committee. My name is Sammy Rahamim, and I'm an undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota. I identify as a progressive and as an Israeli-American. I am also a strong supporter of the two-state solution, which means an independent Palestine living in peace and security next to the Jewish and democratic state of Israel. I'm here to tell you about my experience as a Jewish student leader at the University of Minnesota. Last spring, campus activists of the Global Boycott, Divest, and Sanctions, or BDS, movement brought forward a campaign titled UMN Divest, calling on the university to divest from four specific companies doing business with the state of Israel. The goal of this movement is to demonize Israel, delegitimize my family's country's existence, and eventually destroy the world's only Jewish state. As Jewish students who support and love the state of Israel, as imperfect as it may be, we could not stay silent in the face of such a bigoted, one-sided attack. Serving as the vice president of the Jewish Student Center in Minnesota Hillel and the president of Students Supporting Israel, I spearheaded a counter campaign, which we called UMN United. Jewish and pro-Israel students had to mobilize quickly, but we all knew that we were standing up for our community and our values. It was not the first time that Jewish students were targeted by the BDS movement's anti-Semitic attacks and rhetoric. On November 3rd, 2015, BDS activists organized a protest to shout down and shut down a lecture by distinguished Israeli ethicist Moshe Halbertal at the University of Minnesota Law School. Professor Halbertal was there to talk about moral challenges in asymmetric warfare when a uniformed army is fighting against an ununiformed militia, and how the uniformed professional army carries the utmost responsibility to prevent civilian casualties on the other side, even if it means putting their soldiers in greater danger. But to these anti-Israel activists, that didn't matter. All that mattered to them was that he was an Israeli Jew, and that was enough for them to illegally silence him, delaying the lecture by over 45 minutes. Three people were arrested. It was chaos. It was, as someone earlier mentioned, a mob. Similarly, it didn't matter that the companies targeted by the BDS campaign at the U, by and large, provide Israel with defense technology, such as the Iron Dome missile defense system. And as terrible as it is that BDS marginalizes the Jewish community on campus and fosters a climate of anti-Semitism, perhaps its most tragic aspect is that it does nothing to bring Israelis and Palestinians closer to a two-state solution, one where each people is afforded a future of security and dignity. In fact, it only drives the two sides further apart. On campus, I made numerous attempts to work with BDS leaders to create positive change for Israelis and Palestinians. Sadly, they rejected any offer to negotiate, any offer to compromise, or amend the resolution to call for a socially responsible investment in all companies working in all countries. Yes. Ultimately, I proposed such an amendment to the Minnesota Student Association Forum, thereby making their BDS resolution about global socially responsible investment, instead of setting a discriminatory double standard against the world's only Jewish state. It came as no surprise that after the forum voted to adopt this amendment, the BDS leaders removed themselves from their authors as authors of their own resolution, thus exposing their true intentions to pursue a one-sided attack against Israel. Thankfully, they did not succeed. The student-led UMN United campaign was a victory for Jewish and pro-Israel students. We could not have done it without the support of our community partners such as the JCRC and the bipartisan coalition of 80-plus legislators, and including several on this committee, who successfully urged President Kaler to oppose the BDS campaign. Just allow me to note before I close that this bill does not preclude Americans from criticizing Israel. In fact, many of the people who are most critical of Israel and are critical of Israeli policy, as I often do myself, are Jewish. The difference between those of us who are critical of Israel in hopes of it reaching a peace agreement with its neighbors and those who support BDS is that we dream of peace for both peoples, while the BDS movement dreams of the destruction of my family's country. Lastly, companies will, of course, keep their rights to boycott Israel. Just they'll have to know that the state of Minnesota, does not support such discriminatory practices. Thank you.
So thank you for your testimony. The last person that we have is Mr. Assad. And again, I will ask if there's anyone who would like to speak for. We do have some time remaining on that side of the equation. Anyone else wishing to speak for? Seeing none, then our last testifier will be Mr. Assad. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the committee. State your name for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
My name is Waleed Issa. I'm a Palestinian here. Just for the record also, I'm just here to speak my mind, honestly and openly. I'm not trying to take a position, strong position on either side. I just want to express my thoughts to the community because I do care about everybody. As I mentioned, my name is Waleed Issa. I was born and raised in the Hesha refugee camp in Bethlehem. And let me just start right from the start, that we need to affirm that the only visible and just solution to the conflict is the two-state solution. We must reject extremism on both sides. As Palestinians, we have learned from conflict after conflict, trauma after trauma, that if you do not have a country that is yours, a country that you own, ultimately you are always at someone else's mercy. This has not been a very kind history to the Palestinian people. All of us are mortal, and our children deserve so much more than empty promises that may never be. If the two-state solution offers me, as a Palestinian, the best chance at the dignity of self-determination, then how could I not be for it? Now, when it comes to the occupation, let me just be clear. The occupation is illegitimate and must come to an end for there to be a free Palestinian state next to the Israeli state. Adding cost to the occupation is something that I find acceptable. This is why, like many advocates who are for the two-state solution, I had trouble with a bill, occupied territories, because that's not something I do support. However, I find it completely unacceptable also is to discriminate, boycott, divest from, and sanction all Israelis, no matter where they live or work. It does not fit with the necessity of a two-state solution. It also does not recognize that the Israeli people are a very delicate, textured community, including many who are pro-peace and true partners on the ground. If we view all Israelis as one, if we sanction them all as one, if we treat extremists the same way we treat peace-seeking individuals, we risk driving those who want peace into the same camp as those who deny Palestinians and hopes for independent states. As a Palestinian, I do not have the luxury of allowing the BDS movement to undermine the very Israelis that I need to make peace with to obtain my dream of an independent Palestinian state. I don't see any contradiction between opposing the BDS for the Israelis without the territories and supporting a Palestinian state and the economy in Palestine. Because I grew up in the hard conditions of a refugee camp in the occupied Palestine, when the BDS advocates speak of hardship and human rights violations, none of this is a surprise to me. I have lived it. What, however, is really a surprise to me is that too many of these some activists are ignorant at the best and dismissive at worst of the fact that many Palestinians manage to be creative, energetic, and hopeful, despite the obstacle. Many Palestinians are investing in a better future for ourselves and our people. We do my family and other Palestinians a terrible service if we look at them as the only as victims. We hope we help no one when we blindly inflict pain on Israelis, no matter what the collateral damage is to the Palestinians. Yes, Minnesota legislators should vote for the bill for File 400 against BDS only inside Israel, but not to occupy territories, because this is where the Palestinians dream to have their Palestinian state. As a state, we must also invest in supporting Jewish and Muslim Minnesota working together to address peace and reconciliation in Palestine and Israel. What actually concerns me the most is the strong opinion and the strong passion in both sides within our state here, and the gap that keep getting, the divide that keep getting bigger and bigger every single day among our community. It's breaking my heart. It's very sad to see college students who are Arabs and college students who are Jewish are not are divided and not working together. What we need to do to focus to bridge the gap between our community here and not give, 30 minutes to oppose and 30 minutes to support, but to help them get together and understand each other's concerns and hopes better. And that also will help the people on the ground. I just want to end as a wise man once told me, the Jewish and Arab histories and narratives are precious. They must not become political bargaining chips or the subject of negotiations. Palestinians and Israelis do not need to embrace each other's narrative, nor should they abandon their own narrative. They need... Sorry. They don't need each other to confirm their own identities. What they need is a workable way forward to allow them to live side by side in peace. Hearts as well as minds must change to make this possible. Let's let this holy work be continued here today. And just to the end, I think if we wanted to do support the Palestinians and the Israelis, we must support our communities here, whether the Jewish community and the Arab community, to build bridges and get to know each other and work together. My dream is to have them as Minnesotans, not as a Jewish Minnesotans and Arab Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Krisha, before we go to member, any thoughts that you want to share at this point?
I do. And thank you to all the testifiers. As I think through this, as you can tell, it's a very complicated issue. It's a human issue. And at the end of the day, it's people struggling to find paths forward. It's people struggling to get along. It's people trying to find out what the future is going to hold for them. And I'm certainly no way an expert in any of this. And I've listened to as much as I can on both sides. I am very fortunate. I feel like I have learned a tremendous amount and listening to both sides. But what this is coming down to me is, from a policy standpoint, a legislator, that we should not, in the words of President Obama, subsidize discrimination, or taking the stance of Secretary Clinton that anti-Semitism is on the rise in Europe and around the world, and we should not support that. And I think the testifiers that you just heard, when we reject extremism on both sides, perhaps we can allow for more conversations. So I realize there's still going to be lots of emotion on this, and there's still going to be lots of questions. What I would respectfully ask of the committee is that, as a bill author, that we take this vote on a voice vote and not a roll call. Allow me to move it forward and continue to have the conversations. And as with all debate and conversations, the best thing we can do is just keep moving forward and keep people talking. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Kusha, first and only question that I have on the list right now is from Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kusha, I'm happy you changed the language from boycott to discrimination. I think that does change the bill and gives us an opportunity to talk about discrimination. It's heartening to hear you say that the state should not do business with any business that has discriminatory practices. Hopefully that spirit's reflected not just in how we deal with contracts in other countries, but also within our own state. I would hope you would join me in opposing any bill that allows a business to discriminate against any customer that walks in their doors, regardless of their race, color, creed, religion, national origin, sex, disability, or sexual orientation. So I look forward in working with you on all types of discrimination. Thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was fortunate to visit Israel a number of years ago. We also went into the West Bank and Bethlehem. And that was probably, the Christmas after that was probably one of the hardest ever, knowing what the situation is in Bethlehem. However, we also got to meet with the Israeli Foreign Ministry, with the Palestinian leaders, and others that are trying to bring peace to the area. And what I came away with this, we're talking a very small area where people are, their lives are in danger daily. But I still see this piece of legislation as doing more to incite confrontation than truly trying to let the peace process proceed. I'm really troubled by this.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and Representative Kresha. As I've been hearing the testimony on this, we talked about creating a list of companies that are participating in this boycott or discriminating. Do we have a list yet of those companies? And I know I've heard different states have passed this, and I've heard different states have different lists. How are we supposed to determine who these companies are? And are any of these companies currently doing business with the state of Minnesota?
Representative Kresha. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the questions. Those, I'm sure, will have to be reviewed and recommended by the Department of Administration.
Mr. Nelson.
So, Mr. Chair, what I hear there is that we don't have a list currently. And again, that goes back to my earlier comment that we're passing legislation, we're moving this forward, and with the amendment and the exception put in the amendment, it's, you know, I think Representative Kresha and I have a different, when I called it a feel-good, it makes us feel good to pass this. It's good that we can pass stuff that we feel good about, but this is, I'm just saying, it's a feel-good legislation to make us feel good, like we actually have done something. But with the exception that's put on here, I don't see this doing anything. Again, the exemption, and it's broad enough for me to drive a Mack truck through. And so Mr. Chair, where is this bill going to from here?
It will be re-referred to state government finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't I don't like passing legislation that's just about feeling good and not really accomplishing anything, and I don't see this bill, the way it's written with the exemption in it, now accomplishing anything.
Representative Stanstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krisha, I have a lot of concerns about the specific language in this, and I appreciate the word change from boycott to discrimination, but I think that in the long run is probably going to just end up creating more work for all of us here, and maybe open a can of worms that we need to consider carefully before we get into that. And I'm wondering, in your opinion, could your intent or the nature of what you're trying to do here be accomplished better through a resolution than a policy?
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have a bill in front of you. I think this is the best vehicle.
Representative Hanstead?
Have you considered a resolution before this bill?
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. You have a bill in front of you, and I think this is the best solution.
Thank you.
I have no other member questions at this time, so I will review my motion that House File 400, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion carries and the bill is re-referred to State Government Finance. Thank you, Representative Krisha.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
The next bill on the agenda is House File 314. As Representative Anderson makes her way to the testifying table, Mr. Beck, you are going to also testify. So, Mr. Beck, if you are available, just be on deck here as we are preparing for our next bill. Representative Anderson, I will move House File 314 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Welcome to the committee this morning, Representative and Chair Anderson, if you will proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill sets in statute our redistricting principles. These are things that we typically adopt in the year of the redistricting, but we adopt them every 10 years. And rather than doing that, we'd like to put them in statute as well.
Representative Anderson, I'm going to just put you on hold for 1 second. Folks, we do have other committee business, and we would certainly appreciate if you take your conversations at this time outside of the chambers. Members of the audience, please. Representative Anderson, proceed with your testimony.
So, Mr. Chair, as I was saying, to put these principles in statute and then also to make sure that the responsibility rests with the legislature. And that's the bill in a nutshell.
Questions for Representative Anderson on House File 314. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that there are a number of principles that are included in this, but one error that I noticed, I assume that it's an error, is that a historic principle that's been part of redistricting and our direction to the legislature or to the judicial branch that ends up deciding redistricting is about how we protect or don't protect incumbents. And as sitting incumbents, I'm sure that everybody would like to feel really safe in their seats, but that doesn't always serve our democracy well. So I guess this might be a good point for me to offer the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Halverson offers the A1 amendment. Members, the A1 amendment is in your packet. Representative Anderson to the A1 amendment. I'll officially move the A1 amendment for the committee for consideration. Representative Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if the page could give me a copy of the A1 amendment.
We've got it before us twice now.
We're very thorough, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, I'm sorry. If you will restate your comments. Representative Halverson to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this adds incumbents back into our principles of redistricting. There have often been efforts, and we see them frequently, of ways to game the system. for an incumbent or for a political party. And those kinds of games have been played effectively throughout the country, as we've noticed previously, to the point where the courts have stepped in places like North Carolina and said that their redistricting maps are illegal. Having our purpose clearly spelled out in statute is important. And making it crystal clear to the people of Minnesota that we're not here to protect ourselves and our interests, but we're here to protect the interests of the people of Minnesota, to ensure that they have one vote per person and to ensure that their vote counts. And so I want to add this, and I ask the committee to support this amendment to demonstrate to the people of Minnesota that our purpose in our redistricting is to support the vote of the people and not protect incumbents or not protect particular political party advantages.
Representative Anderson to the amendment, followed by Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Halverson. At this time, I'll take this as a friendly amendment, but I reserve the right to look at it further down the road.
To the amendment, Representative Nelson. Right. Other discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Anderson, any other comments before we take public testimony? Mr. Beck, you are on deck, sir. Followed by Anastasia Belladonna Scaria. I've got that correct. Thank you. Mr. Beck, please come forward. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is George Beck. I'm a former chair of the Campaign Finance Board and presently chair of a new nonprofit called Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections. Our job, our mission, is to support fair elections that reflect the will of the people and not the power of money. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for scheduling both of these competing bills in one session here. I'm testifying in support of House File 246 and against House File 314. Minnesota needs a redistricting commission because legislators have an inherent conflict of interest in setting legislative and congressional boundaries. It is unreasonable to expect legislators to draw boundaries that might adversely affect their reelection or the prospects of their political party. In 2010, the DFL proposal would have extended Representative Paulson's 3rd district into more DFL-friendly suburbs to the east. The Republican proposal stacked the northern 7th and 8th districts horizontally rather than vertically. So these were predictably partisan solutions. And I think, simply put, the rule ought to be that legislators should not be able to pick their constituents. I do have an article to hand out. Well, I can get that later. But Professor Schultz wrote an op-ed piece in the Star Tribune this past week. And one of the things he pointed out is that the result of the legislator creating safe districts is that many voters are essentially disenfranchised, and those elected have little incentive to compromise. The result is legislative gridlock and less incentive to listen to constituents' opinions. According to Ballotpedia, there were 17 competitive elections in the Minnesota House in 2012 compared to 24 in 2010. Now, I hesitate to say this, but competitive districts will attract qualified challengers and increase voter turnout with a resulting benefit to democracy. But as I think about it, I think that the more challengers would only happen in congressional elections, Mr. Chair. Not something that you folks would have to worry about. It's hard to overemphasize the importance of redistricting. It is one of the building blocks of a democracy. Several states have recognized this, including California and Arizona, and have established non-legislative commissions to help with redistricting. The constitutionality of both commissions, which, by the way, are similar to House File 246, have been upheld, with the U.S. Supreme Court approving the Arizona Commission. There seems little doubt that this legislation is constitutional. As a result, California now has some of the most competitive districts in the country. Chair O'Donnell, members of the legislature recognize that there are some issues where it should have outside input when it proposed a constitutional amendment to set legislative salaries. The intent was to wall off those decisions from partisan politics. The voters of this state agreed with an amazing 76% in favor. I believe the question of redistricting is at least as important and that the same conflict of interest exists for the legislature.
Mr. Beck, I'm going to ask you to wrap your comments because I know that you are on both bills and we do want to get to both bills today. So we do have a number of testifiers on both of the bills. Thank you, sir.
Very good. I believe that the voters would also approve a redistricting commission if given the opportunity. That's what has happened in other states when the proposal was on the ballot. I urge you to vote against 314 and enact 246. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Our next testifier, Ms. Belladonna Sierra. I'm sorry. I can get through most of it. I apologize. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name. And then, for the record, Nick Harper is the next testifier. Nick Harper. Very good,
morning,
sir.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome. My apologies.
That's okay. We'll practice after the... Good morning, everyone. We have two documents I just want to call your attention to, and because we did submit a formal position statement on the bill, I'm not going to repeat what is already on that document. It's more detailed. We also submitted the redistricting matters be involved general primer of sorts. It's just really good background information that's going to hopefully be a resourceful tool for you as you move about in making your decisions with this bill. Again, my name is Anastasia Belladonna Carrera. I am the new executive director for Common Cause Minnesota. Common Cause Minnesota is a nonpartisan grassroots organization dedicated to restoring the core values of American democracy and empowering ordinary people to have their voices heard within a government that truly belongs to them. Our membership base has recently identified itself as Republicans, Independents, Democrats, and even Green Party members. I first of all wanted to applaud both of the members of the legislature here this morning on taking up such a complicated and very politically charged matter. There's no really easy-made solutions to this process. It will take concentrated bipartisan determination to do the right thing for Minnesotans. There is no place for partisanship in redistricting. So I do thank Representative Anderson and Representative Schultz for taking on the topic and the matter. I'm here on behalf of the 10,200-plus Common Cause multipartisan statewide members. Some of you may have already heard from them through emails or phone calls. Many of them are from your own districts. They deeply care about redistricting reform. Redistricting is one of the most important electoral processes we have as a republic whose government is based on democracy of, for, and by all of its people. The strength of our community's voice depends on district lines that are equitable and authentically reflect its character. Whether the current process for district lines is good for Minnesota or bad depends on what each of you believes the goals of the process to be. An unfortunate byproduct you've already heard a little bit from, when legislators exclusively are responsible for setting district lines is political gerrymandering. Drawing district lines in an equitable manner promotes more competitive elections and results in the election of leaders more likely to act in the true interests of Minnesotans. Partisan redistricting harms the democratic process. Gerrymandering is a bipartisan problem with a bipartisan solution. Partisan gerrymandering cuts through local communities, creating districts favorable to the party in power. This results in lower voter turnout, increased polarization of legislative bodies, a lack of bipartisan compromise, and increase in the likelihood of budget and policy deadlocks. There is ample debate among scholars and practitioners about the role of political insiders, There's ample debate among scholars and practitioners about the role of political insiders, the nature of protection for minority rights, the degree of partisan competition for partisan inequity, and the ability to preserve established or burgeoning communities. But to date, this discussion has been inaccessible to most of the people directly impacted. I don't think many of you would disagree with some basic principles that a good districting process will be open and transparent, allowing communities meaningful opportunity to ask questions and give input. This participation is important since communities are the basic units of the well-designed district. A good redistricting process should help a community secure meaningful representation free from implications of political massaging, be it intentional or unintentional, of legislators, good-intending legislators or not. Minnesota's current process, in summation, for redistricting is not working for Minnesota citizens currently. The last two redistricting cycles have gone to the Supreme Court because of either political impasse or legal challenge. Gains made as a state in the last 20 years to avoid gerrymandering is mostly due to the objective role of the Minnesota Supreme Court in pulling together an independent redistricting commission to draw the maps. House File 314 does not address these issues. I am here to ask you to vote no on House File 314 and to ask that everyone is an informed decision maker on redistricting in committee before voting. Ask the tough questions, please. There is no room for partisanship, and Common Cause certainly stands poised to work with each of you to make sure that you have the information, the data, and the access to nonpartisan experts as you deliberate.
Thank you. I've allowed Mr. Beck and Ms. Belladonna Cardosa and Mr. Harper, I'll let you have a few more minutes because you are on both bills. My assumption is that you're making your case for one and not the other at this time. So that's why I'm giving you a little bit more time than I might give other testifiers. Thank you for your time, Mr. Harper, if you would come forward. And then I have two individuals who have indicated that they'd like to speak on House File 314. Rihanna Yazzi, and then followed by Ms. Razi, would be David Reitz. So those are the two that I have of expressed interest as well to testify. Mr. Harper, welcome. State your name and who you're with. Proceed.
Thank you. My name is Nick Harper. I am here on behalf of the League of Women Voters, Minnesota. Mr. Chair, before I begin, I want to clarify, we are testifying for each bill separately.
Correct. My assumption is that you're making a case on
one, and then
and that your comments won't be as long if you feel that there's additional comments that you need to make on the second bill today.
Correct.
Proceed, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, members. I am a member and a volunteer with the League of Women Voters of Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. As you likely know, the League grew out of the movement to secure for women the right to vote. Along with protecting the right for all citizens to vote, we believe in an open governmental system that is representative, accountable, and responsive. Most importantly, the League does not support or oppose any political candidate or political party. I want to start by saying that the League of Women Voters believes it is good policy to define redistricting principles and procedures into statutes. We support the inclusion of the redistricting principles listed in House File 314. However, the League opposes creating a statutory provision prohibiting the legislature from creating an independent commission composed of non-legislators. The legislature is not subject to open meeting laws or public data laws, otherwise known as the Data Practices Act. Thus, this provision could result in the redistricting process being done with limited public knowledge or input. For this reason, we ask that the members oppose House File 314 as it is currently written. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Ms. Yazzi, and then again, Mr. Reitz, if you are on deck as well, sir. Ms. Yazzi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and share your thoughts with us this morning.
Thank you. My name is Rihanna Yazzi. I'm a playwright, I'm a business owner, and I'm also the founder of Minnesota's only Native American theater company. And I've never come down and testified before here at the state capitol. But I'm really moved to take this action to speak to you because I feel like this is a linchpin issue that has enabled so much chaotic partisanship to just run rampant in our country. and it blatantly ignores and it silences the voices of our citizens. I'm deeply opposed to this, to legislative districts being created by those who benefit the most from them, our politicians. I think that what is being proposed today by Representative Sarah Anderson is clearly gerrymandering. And she's proposing the dictionary definition of it, dividing election districts to give one political party a majority while concentrating the voting strength of the other party into as few districts as possible. We need to have an independent, nonpartisan commission drawing legislative districts, and it shouldn't be the politicians themselves who benefit from it the most. I'm a voter, and I get to have the right to pick my legislators. Legislators shouldn't ever have the mandate and power to pick who gets to vote for them by drawing partisan maps for their political party's advantage and silencing the voices of the people that they work for. Thank you for your time. So I'm opposed for of this 314, but I am in favor of 246.
Thank you so much for
your time.
Thank you
for your
time. Mr. Reitz, and then I have one other testifier, Mr. Jimmy Herrick. You'll be next. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on House File 314? If so, we'll get you going here. Seeing none, Mr. Reitz, then we'll have our final testifier, Mr. Herrick, before we go to committee questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. State your name for the record.
My name is David Reitz. I'm a constituent from Minnetonka. My background and training is as an institutional and political economist. I have a strong background in geographic information systems. I just wanted to speak up to add my support to those that are opposing 314 and those that are speaking out in support of an independent redistricting commission of some kind. I wanted to add a little context to what's going on here as a political economist, is that gerrymandering and, in fact, redistricting is nearly as old as the entire republic, but it's becoming an increasing problem. And one of the reasons I think that it's tough for people to see that it's an increasing problem is they don't understand why that's the case. And the reality is that as political economists and as even constituents and consumers, the data that's available to legislatures and other bodies that are doing redistricting is vastly superior to what it has been in the past. Coupling that with the availability of geographic information systems that allow you to do simultaneous calculations, as well as very strong algorithms that allow partisan redistricting, it's an increasing problem, and in fact, it's something that I think a lot of people don't have a lot of background towards. I'd like to point the committee and in fact, the entire public to the Annenberg Center redistricting game. It's at redistrictinggame.org. It's a fantastic way to educate yourself about how a pervasive problem this can be and the impact it can have on our elections. So I just wanted to again say to the committee members, in fact, everyone else that will be looking at this bill, this is a siren song that you don't want to be part of. I mean, the reality is this is a serious problem around the country. We don't want Minnesota to become even more of a part of this problem. So, again, I'll speak out against 314 in support of independent redistricting commissions. And I do want to say as well that this is something that I think there's no easy solution to, and I think everyone should be aware of that. But going in the direction of making it something that's done by the legislature and that will clearly have a strong incentive towards partisanship is exactly the wrong direction to go.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Mr. Herrick. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Herrick. I'm from Lauderdale. And I would like to ask the committee to take a little bit larger look at this if we could. Well, first of all, I support Common Cause, and I'm a member. I support George Beck's organization. I'm a member of Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections, and also an active member of Move to Amend. That is a national organization with 10,000 representatives across the state of Minnesota. As you're well aware, our state and our country and as a whole are experiencing more strife, certainly more political strife than I've ever seen in my lifetime. And the Economist recently downgraded our democracy to a flawed democracy. We are no longer a full-fledged democracy. And that's due in large parts to the credibility of our institutions has been lost. And we need to find ways to strengthen these institutions to help to bring our country back together. two issues that where legislatures have historically had sometimes contributed to their own lack of public confidence and undermined their own credibility are the ability to set their salaries and for them to the methods of setting legislative districts. And for that reason, I would urge this committee to look at the opportunity that you have to help improve that credibility of yourselves and of the Minnesota legislature as a whole by accepting House File 246 and rejecting 314. Thank you.
Mr. Harrigan, thank you for your comments. Member questions? Representative Halverson. Representative Nelson follows.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, do you know the last time that Minnesota legislature passed a redistricting plan? I only remember judicial ones. So I'm wondering when.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was when Governor Ernie Carlson was governor.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the only question I have is looking at the difference in your bill and what has happened in the past when the courts have done it, is the percentage of difference in the between the half a percent or the two-tenths of a percent. Why did you go to the larger number?
Representative Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. Actually, I amended this bill last year when we heard it in committee because you had concerns about that, and so the actual deviation is the number that you had recommended, the 0.5%. So if you're looking on line 1.18, it must not deviate from the ideal of 0.5% plus or minus.
But the courts is lower.
Okay, I'm sorry, I had it backwards. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, I have no other questions. Chair Anderson, we'll give you the final word. Representative Halverson. Again, just for the record, we do have one other bill that we'd like to get to today as well.
I understand, but I really do want to understand the process here. So if your bill becomes law, Representative Anderson, will we continue the path that we've kind of been on in terms of the legislature can't reach an agreement, there's a lawsuit, and then the courts take over, or would this your bill prohibit the courts from an independent body from having a say?
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Halverson, this doesn't change that the governor doesn't agree to the bill that the legislature puts before him. It doesn't change that criteria that then the courts step in at that point. It just says that this has to stay with the responsibility of the legislature.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, can you tell me exactly why you are putting this forward at this point in time? I know we're going into redistricting, but I just question why.
Chair Anderson.
Why it's phrasing the way it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mason. This is something I've been working on since the last redistricting cycle, and I need to prepare for that. It's going to come sooner than people realize, and I'd like to have these in place now versus then.
Seeing no other member questions, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just for a final word on this issue, folks always say that a commission will solve all the problems when it comes to redistricting. And if you just look to the state of California and the problems that they've experienced there with their commission, they're still experiencing lawsuits. So a commission will not take away the issue of lawsuits, same as happened in Arizona with their commission. And also, a commission does not take away the issue of whether people are drawing the lines based on political issues or not. In fact, when you look at the state of California, there's a great article I suggest you all read. It's written by ProPublica. And in there it says, I apologize, I usually never do this, but I'm going to in this one circumstance. It says, the Citizens Commission had pledged to create districts based on testimony from the communities themselves, not from parties or statewide political players. To get around that, Democrats surreptitiously enlisted local voters, elected officials, labor unions, and community groups to testify and support configurations that coincided with the party's interests.
When they appeared before the commission, those groups identified themselves as ordinary Californians and did not disclose their ties to the party. So if you think that a commission is going to solve the problem, it is not. The ideal of having it as part of the legislature is that we are held accountable to the people of the state. We're not a Met Council. We have to win votes from the people that we represent. And if people don't like what we do, they can vote us out. You can't do that with a commission. And with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your support.
Members, I renew my motion that House File 314 as amended be referred to the Committee on Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Representative Schultz, we are right up against the time, but I do want to get your bill before the committee so that we can lay it over and consider it at some point in the future, since we, since you are patient enough to be here with us today to at least get the process underway with the two different ideas that we're looking at today. Representative Schultz, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 214 to be, actually what I will do is I will we'll bring House File 246, excuse me, for the committee to be laid over for possible future discussion. Representative Schultz, with that, I ask you to go ahead and present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll and members of the committee. This bill allows a bipartisan commission to conduct legislative redistricting. It contains the principles from the Minnesota Supreme Court Special Redistricting Panel in 2011. It reduces conflict of interest by taking redistricting away from legislators who should not be selecting individuals who will then vote for them. With a nonpartisan bipartisan commission to produce more fair and competitive districts, it reduces partisanship and polarization, leading hopefully to more moderate candidates and more compromise. Nationally, since the 1970s, about 120 of the 435 U.S. House seats were competitive. Today, only about 25 are competitive, leading to more polarization and gridlock in Washington, D.C. Having a commission of bipartisan retired judges will hopefully alleviate the concerns that are happening in California and Arizona. Having a third-party commission will save taxpayers money. It'll be more timely and more efficient. Right now, Wisconsin and the state of Virginia are spending millions of dollars in litigation and lawsuit costs. So I think we should pass this legislation to save taxpayers money, to be more responsible to our voters, and to give more power to the people, since this will be done in open public meetings. Thank you.
Representative Schultz, thank you. There are three people who have not had a chance to testify previously, and we had a few folks who were testifying and shared comments on both bills. And we have some members of the public, and I want to be respectful of their time with us today. So I'd like to give them each a minute or so to be able to address the committee before we do lay the bill over. The first person I have is Rachel Garrity. Rachel Garrity.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
If you'll state, you probably know how the drill works at this point. I haven't watched it all morning, but just state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Rachel Garrity. I'm a registered voter in House District 59B. And I am here today of my own accord. And I want to thank you, Representative Schultz, for getting forth this legislation. I want to let you know that I'm taking time off of work today to be here. I spent hours over the weekend researching Bill 246, 314, and then another bill in the Senate to try to make sense what they mean for me as a Minnesota voter. And what I concluded is that Bill 246 would be the best for Minnesota voters like me. Right now, I feel as if the value of my vote is determined by partisan games. I know that many other Minnesotans feel this way as well. And frankly, as a voter, I don't have time to be at every committee hearing and read every bill and advocate for my own God-given right to vote. That's your job. And that's why I'm asking you today to support this legislation to create an independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission. Going forward, it's the only way that I know the value of my vote will be protected every year from now into the future. So thank you again, Representative Schultz, and thank you again for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Ms. Gary, thank you for your testimony this morning and joining us. The next person that I have is Tim Walatska. Walatsky? Sorry, sir. And then on deck will be Ms. Jennifer Hall, and those are the individuals who have, and members, I appreciate it, members of the public as well, for your patience today. You'll proceed with your testimony after you've stated your name. We appreciate it.
Hello, my name is Tim Walatsky, and I'm a Minneapolitan. Remind them to prescribe the bounds of the state's districts, and through gall and guile, legislators will distort those lines into most favorable gerrymanders. Look at how the fox, some warn, will skulk to the henhouse it must now guard. Well, I've taken a long look around the room, and I no more see a fox in you than I see a hen in my own mirror's reflection. Instead, what I see are ordinary folks representing the people of Minnesota. And time again, over the past several decades, others have attempted to piece together a patchwork of districts. And time again, the product of their design has fallen short and been tossed out to criticisms of partisanship and naked self-interest, reducing in estimation the legislatures and their body, the legislature, in the eyes of the people. It's only human for people to assume the worst of their representatives, just as it's only human for those same representatives to fail in their worthy quest to ignore and deny their own self-interest while attempting to draw their own districts. It's a hard task, ignoring your own benefit. Rather than codify the cycle, condemning future legislators to the fate of being reduced to caricature, I urge instead you proudly defer and devolve your authority to an independent body of judges who can forge maps held accountable and transparent to the public via hearings. No longer subjected to rumor of backroom schemes and deals, no longer accused of moving a street to remove a senator, legislators will not only accumulate more credibility, but the legislature as a whole will take on more respect, reflecting its constituting numbers. I urge you then to vote for and guide Representative Schultz's bill all the way to the governor's desk. And having done so, return to your offices, your districts, your homes, not a fox, not a representative tainted by doubt, but a proud member of an institution that will ultimately outlast us all, the Minnesota State Legislature. Thank you.
Mr. Okloski, thank you so much for your testimony. Ms. Hall, you apparently are going to have a tough act to follow here in theater today. So we will give you the final word today from the public before we move to lay the bill over. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, yes, that's not fair. This is my first testimony, and I have to follow him. I'm Jennifer Hall, and I'm a community organizer at the Native American Community Development Institute. And I'm an Ojibwe woman who works on nonpartisan voter engagement here in the Twin Cities Native American community. I want to express my support and thank Representative Schultz for bringing this forward. Now more than ever, the Minnesota government needs to be accountable to and inclusive of all of its citizens. Having a nonpartisan commission establish politically competitive legislative districts with an eye toward not diluting the voting strength of minority populations is a key way to ensure that accountability. I urge you all to support a transparent, robust democracy in Minnesota by supporting a districting structure that fosters this. Sorry I didn't have a poem, but I really appreciate your time. Be good.
Well, Ms. Hall, you did a fine job anyhow, for the record. With that, Representative Schultz, we'll give you a couple moments before we lay the bill over, and then we will continue.
Well, thank you for hearing the bill, committee, and Chair O'Driscoll. I did have two handouts that were passed out by a column by Professor David Schultz from Hamline. I believe he's no relation to myself. And then a letter, his statement, was passed out.
Sir, I did not see you before when we were asking for folks. Did you have a brief comment that you wanted to share on this? We'll give you about 60 seconds. Will that work for you? Because I'm already going to have people from this committee saying, I'm late for appointments, but I do want to hear from you. We'll give you the last word on this morning, sir.
Thank you very much.
State your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Justin Lewandowski, and I'm from Senate District 14, the folks up in St. Cloud. And I wanted to come down specifically to talk about people losing faith in the electoral process, specifically in Senate District 14, where we've been hit very hard in the last two cycles with outside expenditures and dark money that both of our candidates in 14B specifically have said that they're against. The reason why I'm for this bill today is because we need the people of Central Minnesota and my community. I'm representing hundreds of people who wish they could drive down through the snow and the ice today to talk about we need faith in our legislators. I'm here representing my friends who are Republican, Independent, Green, and Democrat alike, and the people who don't vote because they're losing faith in our legislators. I think that this bill is a wonderful idea to make sure that we can restore the faith of our democracy and people who feel like they have none left to give. So I'm here today from St. Cloud, from Senate District 14, on behalf of my people, regardless of their political affiliation, saying that this is the best way forward to restore faith in democracy and to restore faith in this beautiful House of Representation in Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewandowski. With that, we are going to lay over 246, and we are